This episode and all of our Sundance coverage is brought to you by Rode Microphones. Hey everybody, this is John Fusco, and you're listening to the No Film School Podcast. This week on the show, we have Jonathan Milot and Carrie Murnian, co-directors of Bushwick, a film that premiered in Sundance's Progressive Midnight section. The premise for the film may have seemed insane a decade ago when Milot and Murnian first came up with it, but now it doesn't seem so far-fetched. Brittany Snow plays Lucy, a woman who is making her way home in Bushwick while on break from grad school, only to get off the subway to realize that her Brooklyn neighborhood is under siege by an unknown enemy. It is later revealed that Texas and a handful of other states have seceded from the Union and are the force behind the attack. With the help of Stoop, a former Marine played by Dave Bautista, they attempt to fight their way through the city to get back to safety. For Milot and Murnian, the road to making Bushwick was paved by a ton of hard work and self-education. Neither went to film school, but through a series of successful short film competitions, they were able to capture the eye of a producer at South by Southwest. That led to a directing gig on the 2014 horror comedy Cooties. We discussed the steps they took to win that film and how their process of making a movie evolved once they had one in the can. I hope you enjoy. All right, so I am here at Sundance with the co-directors of Bushwick. I'm going to let you guys introduce yourselves so the listeners can get accustomed to your voice.
Hi, my name is Carrie Murnian.
And I'm Jonathan Milot.
Okay, so your first movie was Cooties, right? Can you talk about how you got into the position to make that movie?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. So we had, so just a little bit of history that kind of leads up to that is that John and I went to school for animation and design at Parsons School of Design in New York. We did not go to school for film, but we always wanted to. It's almost like I think we felt we could have gone to film school, but doing graphic design was more practical. You get a job maybe afterwards. At least that's maybe how I thought of it.
Oh, yeah.
And
I started in fine art school.
Okay.
And I had a panic attack and went to graphic design. So, you know, going art and film school is kind of the same, like, you know, what the hell are you going to do when you graduate?
Yeah, but absolutely. Yeah.
So we graduated together and we started a business doing design, successful business, but we always, just on the side, we'd do short films, a lot of animation, and then we also would do these kind of experimental live action films because I think that's where we wanted to eventually go. And so it was back in the early 2000s, and we did a short film that Nike had seen, and they contacted us, and they gave us an opportunity to pitch them to direct a short film. They picked 10 different directors to do, it was called The Art of Speed, and they asked directors to pitch them an idea about how to do a short film, that how to do a speed, and they gave each of us a theme, and ours was endurance. So it was cool for us because we pitched them an idea, and they gave us money, they gave us 20 grand, to make this film.
To make a short film.
And so it was like film school for us.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we wanted to try something new and we hadn't done, I think they thought we're going to do an animation, but then we thought, let's do a live action, let's see what we can do here. And we pitched an idea, it was called The Shortest Race, and the whole race from start to finish is 39.9 inches. So we kind of flipped this endurance on its head, like let's do something that's the opposite of endurance and make something kind of cool out of it. So we did documentary, like a faux documentary, kind of in the best of show kind of style, where we had some actors, some real people, and we interviewed them, and then they really had to win this race, and we had $700 at the end to kind of for the winner. I know. But so then that kind of led to doing short films, and we did Boob, which was a company was trying to do. They were asking directors to do short films to go in front of feature films. And they gave us, I think it was
similar.
Like, it was like 20 grand. And they said we could do something rated R if we wanted to. And we're like, well, this is our opportunity to do something like to use that. So we thought of this idea to do a movie called Boob, which you can look up online.
Be careful, though.
Yes.
Yeah. Bad search words. Boob.
Yeah. Boob movie. And it's about a boob that comes alive.
Nice.
And it terrorizes the hospital, tries to escape, and gets out and dies. And for us, it was kind of like, again, like kind of making everything. We thought everything in horror movies have come alive in the history. Like, we hadn't seen a boob come alive yet, so let's try to do that. So that film got around. It went to South by Southwest, and it got to this guy named Todd Brown, who now is part of XYZ Films, and he knew Elijah Wood and his partners at SpectraVision, and they were looking for directors for Cooties. And Cooties is this kind of mix of horror and comedy, and so was our short film. And so they passed along our short film to Elijah, and he watched it and they loved it. And they didn't give us the film. We had to pitch for it. They were looking at, I think, 4 or 5 directors. They gave us a script, kind of a very secret script they were working on with, you know, Lee Wannell and Ian Brennan, who are from Saw and Glee, wrote the script together. And we had to go out to LA, and we had to, you know, we worked for about 3 months on like a pitch book to try to win the movie. And we went out there, pitched to them.
And we went to the wrong address and were late for our pitch.
Yeah.
So, awesome. Yeah. Don't do that.
Yeah, that's one thing to learn. Use your GPS in a good way. And we got there, and it was great. It was like a true like pitch experience in Hollywood, where you go into this big conference room. Elijah was not there, but it was his partners were there, and then both Lee Wannell and Ian Brennan were both there. And they were working with some big producers who came in. We had to kind of run the room. We had to kind of go through our pitch book, and we also had a sizzle reel, which we took, you know, different films and kind of put together what we thought the tone would be for this film. And so we pitched, and they loved it. And then we heard it was not like for another year that it was like a year, right?
Yeah. The funding was not together.
Yeah.
So did you get the film? Did you get the film before?
No, it wasn't. Like they kind of said, like, we're waiting, and we thought we hadn't got it. And we heard other people might have got it, but it was never official. And so we kind of thought it had passed, but it wasn't officially done. And we check in with them. We say, oh, how is that film coming? And they'd say, well, you know, it's come along, and, you know, we'll keep in touch. And then it wasn't until the year later where we got a call that they were deciding they had the money. Come out to LA.
No. It was like a call and like a Sunday afternoon, like, can you come out to LA tomorrow? And we're, well, yeah. So we literally jumped on a plane and ran out there. And then we didn't quite realize that the funding still wasn't together. So we got out there and probably spent another few weeks or even longer than that getting the, you know, making sure the funding was in place, doing more interviews, talking to financiers, and then kind of getting, then we started getting stars like Rainn Wilson on board.
Once you were attached to the project, did more funding come in because you guys were attached?
We had to prove. Because we were established. Yeah, so right. It was more like we had to prove to them that they could invest in us.
I see.
And then after that was done, you know, Elijah was the only actor who was attached to begin with. And you kind of learn more and more that to get movies financed, either, you know, there's a couple of ways, but the script can be genius that they, you know, whatever, they can just invest money in the script. But mostly it's that who the actors are. And this is a movie that was under $10 million, and they had to get a certain kind of group of actors that they thought could make this movie work. So Elijah was on.
Yeah, for example, you know, this is just kind of fake, you know, fake points or whatever you want to call it. But say like Elijah is like 1,000 points and you need 4,000 points to get your money made. So then we'd need an actor who's worth, you know, 500 points or something like that. And that's obviously simplifying it a lot. There's a lot more that goes into it, but it does come down to that for certain financiers, and the financiers need all those points for the actors to add up for the foreign sales, the domestic sales and all this stuff. And so we didn't really know any of that coming in. We were like, let's make this movie. What's the delay?
But was that your responsibility to get those actors?
We had to go meet with them.
Yeah.
Like they
get them on board.
Get them on board. And so Rainn Wilson was the next one. We really had to kind of go and meet with him. He was the next big actor that came on. And then it kind of was the other supporting actors. And we went to every single one of them. And gradually they all kind of signed on to do it. And, you know, it's an ensemble piece that really depended on all these actors kind of working together. And some of them knew each other, which was nice. We were filming in LA, which helped us because they all lived there and they thought, let's do a movie in LA together. So that was part of it, was us proving to them. And then I think they were kind of like, some of them, we wanted to get the tone right with them. They read the script and they wanted to see how we were going to approach it. So we had to kind of get them.
And that, I think, especially, you know, for maybe your listeners that haven't done any films before, you know, obviously they could see our short film, which is really important for actors working with directors. They want to see that you've done something. So doing anything, I think, to be able to show your skills is important. But, you know, our lookbook was pretty extensive at the time.
For Cooties, yeah.
Yeah, that showed our, you know, the tone, the style, and
our,
of course,
influences.
Yeah, and of course discussing that with them, but that helped a lot.
So how did you go about compiling that lookbook? Like, what did you include as far as like physically, like pictures of previous movies?
Yeah, And it came from so the experience, we worked a lot in advertising. We do commercials, and that was how you win commercials. You put together a lookbook, you pitch to agencies, you get it. So we knew kind of like at least how to start doing it. And
you pretty much had a background in production, yeah, at the time.
Yeah. So we knew that was a way to do it. And you go through the whole thing. You go through theme. You go through the movies that you think are good influences, like the mashup of movies. And we had our mashup was Raising Arizona, Gremlins, Trainspotting, and
Die Hard. Was Die Hard?
No, that wasn't in the original. I think those were like the main three.
No horror?
No, that was the thing. Like Gremlins. Gremlins, like for us, like
horror comedy.
Horror Gremlins, comedy. Yeah. That's one of the better there's not a lot of good horror. We didn't do Shaun of the Dead because that was it didn't really fit, and there wasn't other there's not a lot of good horror comedies out there, and so I think that for us, Gremlins was a good parallel to these kids, you know, coming out and kind of cute little kids who are fighting back. So those are our three, and I think we surprised them with something like Raising Arizona and Trainspotting, where it wasn't your three or four horror films. It was like, you know, comedy, you know, a lot of good visuals, which they really want to do with Cooties, and that's how we kind of want it. So we go through that, and you also go through locations and everything, props,
actors,
yeah, you suggest characters.
But the thing that we found since then, which is, you know, it's been a few years since we did that original pitch to now, and having done a lot more commercials, is that the commercial lookbook is different, that you really do a lot more writing. You know, you would really get into depth about how, you know, the themes and a lot of more writing. Whereas I feel like the lookbook for films is more about you do inspiration and kind of, you wouldn't write as much. You would get the images and then talk about it.
More visual and then selling it.
Because you're in the room pitching rather than just handing it off. In advertising, you kind of hand off the lookbook and you hear if you got it. This one, you're there pitching in the room.
So then let's move on to Bushwick, because now you guys have an established film.
Yeah.
You've had it in mind for quite a while. Did you have like a script written?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting because, you know, Bushwick, we had started before Cooties, at least the development of it. So we'd had this idea to do Bushwick like 7 years ago. So Bushwick was filmed in these long takes, and we had to prove that we could film these long takes. So we were about to do a sample scene for Bushwick. We had producers on board who wanted to do it, and that's when Cooties came. They'd seen our short film, and they asked us to do it. So we took a pause on Bushwick, filmed Cooties, did the whole thing with that. We went to Sundance with that. Lionsgate bought it. It went out. That was great. So after Cooties was done, we thought, let's get back to Bushwick. We really want to do that. It's nothing like Cooties. We didn't want to be pegged as like the horror comedy guys. Let's do that. So Cooties both helped and also confused people. And that's something to learn as a director as well, because, you know, it helped to establish that we'd done something. Like, we have, you know, if you looked up our name, we had a movie, it had gone the sun, that all helped. But it did also confuse mostly actors, because they would, you know, they'd read the script, which was more of a serious kind of script for Bushwick, and then they'd watch Cooties, and they'd come back to us and say, wait, is this going to be a comedy? And we say, no, it's not at all. So we had to prove to them, or not prove, but we had to kind of talk it through with them and describe our tone for Bushwick, and that, so Cooties, again, it helped and also kind of confused people.
But I also think in the end, I was talking to some of our producers last night on for Bushwick, and they did say how much it helped. It really did help solidify some actors and some financing that we had done a feature before. So, you know, I definitely think there's many levels, but in the end, of course, if you have a feature, it helps. But it does, like Carrie said, it probably confused because we want to do something so different.
But at least it got us the chance to talk to them. And like, that's the big thing. If we didn't have Cooties, they might not have even had a chance to call us up, and then we can explain ourselves to actors and producers.
Does the point system still exist in this scenario?
Oh yeah.
And on this, and for Bushwick, we, you know, because it's our idea and we're executive producers on Bushwick, we'd have much more control over it. You know, Cooties was kind of a directors for hire.
Right.
But for instance, with casting, and I think any movie, that it comes down to, you know, we would come down with a short list of who we think would be perfect for some of the main parts.
Oh, the point. Oh, your points thing. Oh, okay.
That's what you're talking about, right? Yeah.
I was talking about points on the back end.
Yeah. No. It's so, okay, you know, we would say like, well, we want these three guys, and we'd send this out to the producers and the agents and the financiers, and it would be like, we definitely can't do these two guys. Yeah. And you'd be like, well, I don't understand. This guy is in, you know, just got a Golden Globe or something. Like, why can't he? And they say, well, he doesn't have any, you know,
international.
So you're like, okay. But it, like everything with film, I think there's sometimes you go down routes that you don't necessarily think, and it takes you to a place that can be better. And you know, I think that happens sometimes. You know, with casting to locations to anything.
This episode and all of our Sundance coverage is brought to you by Rode Microphones, 100% Australian-owned and made professional microphones for studio and broadcast, and My Rode Reel, the world's largest short film competition. Now in its fourth year running, with over $500,000 in prizes given away so far, My Rode Reel is back, bigger, and better in 2017. More films, new judges, and more prizes. To view past winners and register for 2017, head to myrodereel.com and sign up now. Well, then let's get into the production of Bushwick, because you guys started talking about it in the Q&A last night, and it sounds crazy, because you did it, what, in 15 days?
Yeah, we did. Yeah, we shot it 15 days. Which is short for any film, let alone like a feature that's very complicated to shoot and on location, which is hard.
But I mean, so the thing was, we did these long takes, and what we would do is a 10-minute take is 10 pages. So if you can do that, you know, getting 10 pages in a day is not bad for a feature film. So if we could, you know, articulate that one shot and it gets 10 pages done, then we're doing pretty good.
Yeah, and you said, you know, talk a little bit about the... why are they doing that?
they're doing like a party session.
It's weird. All right.
Hey, it's a party podcast.
Yeah. So talk about the decision. Did you always know that it was going to be like a long shot movie, or was that something that... Oh, yeah, because you said you had the initial idea for it, right?
Yeah, it always was... I mean, the original idea was to do like a real one take.
Yeah.
Like one long take.
And like Victoria.
Like Victoria. Like,
right,
yeah.
Right.
And... then as we moved along with the script, we felt like we didn't want to be stuck with that.
Yeah.
Because we didn't want to be following people too much. We wanted to kind of use cuts in kind of unique in certain ways. So we thought, look, it can still be authentic in that feeling of it. More like we think of Gravity as like that. Like, I think you feel Gravity is sort of like a one take, but yeah, it's not. There are like a lot of hard cuts in there, but you still have that feeling.
Kind of Birdman too.
Well, they try to make... you know, there's two cuts in Birdman. There's like beginning where they cut in, and at the end, but then the whole middle is they stitch it all together as one take. And I think so. We thought about something like that, but then we did actually go back to like there's 9 hard cuts in the film, and we use those as in very strategic places. And again, we didn't want to be stuck with the format. We didn't want the format to overrule the content.
So how do you go about planning that as directors?
Yeah, we planned it. A lot of it was location, I think, because we had our script, and I think that the way they wrote the script was, they kind of wrote it as one take. There wasn't, maybe from the school they had a built in one hard cut, but mostly they wrote it as one take, and we would then went in and decided where to cut depending on where the locations were. And that kind of took a process where we had a certain 5-block radius in mind in Bushwick, and they got most of it, which was kind of amazing. And then some places that they couldn't secure, we like, you know, for instance, there's a church scene, and the exterior of the church is in Bushwick. We go in the church, and the interior is in Clinton Hill, which is a whole other neighborhood. And so that some of those things we had to kind of use depending on location. Yeah.
But I think, you know, I was saying at the screening last night is that we filmed it 3 times. So pre-viz, basically. We did a really rudimentary pre-viz with just Carrie, myself, and the DP. And we just kind of went to the locations when we were pretty sure we had them and started walking through it, started blocking it, started figuring out how are we going to film for 10 minutes and not have the camera just sitting in the corner staring at these actors, or how are we going to not have the camera just ping-ponging between the actors' faces, you know. Like, so we did that, and then we did a few weeks of rehearsal with the actors, with bigger, more, you know, more of the crew, and we really kind of locked it in more. And then on the day of the shoot, we actually spent probably half the day rehearsing. So you know, it wasn't a typical shoot day, even. It was like mostly a rehearsal day, because then you do 4 or 5 takes of a 10-minute, you know, shot, and then that would be it.
So in the end, how much like footage, how many hours of footage did you have to work with?
It's not a lot.
Not a lot, because it was mostly rehearsal time.
And for us, it was this thing where we had to edit before the movie was done. I mean, before we shot the movie.
Right.
I mean, like, you can't think, oh, let's get a bunch of coverage and see what kind of works. We had to have every single piece in there, like, fitting together before it was done. And that's how we had kind of made it work.
And interestingly, it was very rare that there was like two or three takes that we like couldn't decide between. It was usually, that's the take. We're using that one, and there's no question.
Well, it's interesting. It seems like that challenge really maybe helped you in the long run.
Yeah.
And I know the actors, I know the camera operators love it. I know the actors love it. Everybody on the, you know, on set loves knowing that what you're doing is going to be seen, because if you're shooting coverage, the actors don't know how much is going to get cut out. The cameramen don't know, you know, they just did this amazing camera move and it's going to get cut.
Yeah,
of course it's going to cut, because you got to cut for time. But with this, it's pretty much all there.
Let's talk about the camera work a little bit, because it was really incredible.
It was amazing.
Your DP is on fire right now.
So the DP is Lyle Vincent. We worked with him on Cooties, and then he shot A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which was a big Sundance hit during a couple years ago. And then he did Anna Lily's her new movie Bad Batch. And he also is here with Thoroughbred in Sundance. Each one of them is a completely different style.
Yeah.
Like Cooties is different than Bushwick, which is different than Girl Walks Home, which is different than Thoroughbred.
And then he shoots our commercials too, which are mostly like comedy.
Yeah.
So totally different.
So he's a genius. We knew we'd use him for the movie. We did all our, as John said, we did all the testing footage with him. And so he was a big part of how the movie looked and how it all worked. We didn't go in thinking, oh, let's do it on Movi. You know, we first thought we'd do Steadicam. We used Steadicam. We didn't want it to feel like a doc kind of style. We wanted to kind of be more smooth shots. And then he looked into Movi, and he got this great camera operator named Frank Larson, who had worked with him on a couple of projects. And they worked out this whole system of how the Movi worked, how to pass the Movi to different operators as to make it all kind of seamless. And it was just we can't imagine doing something like that without them, because they're just so amazing.
So the Movi was literally in one take, like in one long take, it would be passed from camera operator to camera operator?
Yeah. And there's a couple, like there's one scene at the beginning of the movie where we go inside an alleyway in Bushwick, and we're following Lucy, you know, Brittany Snow down the alley. And you can kind of see that there's this drop off about maybe 12 feet down into some backyards of some apartment buildings. So she's going along, the camera's following her, she gets chased down, and we had someone hidden behind, kind of down underneath behind the wall, and they pass it off to the other operator, and then he followed her down into the basement of a building. So we were going from the street into an alley, into backyards, down to a basement, all pretty seamless. And I hope what it also looks like, it's not like a wow, it's not like I'm not showing off.
No.
It should just feel like natural.
Yeah. You almost don't notice it.
Yeah. Hopefully you don't notice it.
Which is funny.
Yeah. Hopefully you don't notice it too much. And we don't have, we have like maybe one or two shots I think are like a little bit more stylized. Like there's one we go up into a window and zoom in a window. But otherwise, you just don't feel it. You just kind of feel like you're with the character and the camera's just floating around there.
It's like, you guys know 40X? Have you heard of that 40X cinema? Where
no. Oh, yeah, sure. You're like
any
moving.
Any plans to put it out in that?
Oh, that'd be pretty rad, yeah. with some smells of Bushwick, too?
Yeah.
The wind, yeah.
But the canal. I think this was probably the first whole movie completely filmed on a Movi
in
Alexa Mini.
I think so.
Yeah.
Well, we're running out of time here, so wrapping up, I just want to get your best piece of advice for emerging filmmakers trying to make it into the game.
Yeah, I think it's just perseverance, realizing that movies take a long time to get going. If someone says no, that's not like you're going to hear lots of no's. So just keep on, if you believe in it, usually it'll come. I think you have to have a good idea, but I think you really have to persevere, because there's so many people trying to make movies, and it can be so easy to kind of just drop off. And I think if we hadn't kept on going with this, it could have easily not ever happened.
Yeah, and I think, it's cliche, it's basically just do. There's no reason not to do anymore. But I also think one of the things that we always did kind of you know, like this with this movie. It's not really the reason to use the movie, and you know, that's not why we're making the movie, but there is a lot of cool new stuff out there. You know, learn VR, learn some of this new stuff that the old filmmakers can't do, and you're immediately ahead of you know, so many other people that are, you know, stuck doing the old stuff. So if you're a young filmmaker, you're still learning anyway, so just learn more of the new stuff and, you know, see how you can create new visuals in ways that no one has ever seen before, and that will be, I think, a way to really differentiate yourself and, you know, make yourself stand out.
I think that one more thing to follow up, your background doing like multiple shorts mm-hmm. on your own, like yeah. through Help. Production.
Oh man, it helps so much. And because we know the process. We know how a movie can get made from start to finish in a short films. So when we got on the feature films, we were able to kind of see how that process worked.
And how did you, that initial short, like what was the like experience like for that? How did you get that going?
Well, actually, it's funny because the Nike one, we really hadn't done any, we had done a little bit of live action, but we didn't know what a producer was. We didn't know what a production company was. And we needed to actually get a camera. We needed a slow motion film camera.
Yeah.
And so we called up the camera company, we looked online, found a camera company, said, we want that slow motion company. And they're like, well, do you have a producer that we can talk to? And we said, no. So we essentially got this camera company to almost produce our film because we had no idea what we're doing.
Yeah.
So we just did it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the key takeaway from that was we had no idea what we were doing. We didn't know any of the rules or we didn't know anything, and we just did it. And somehow we made a movie.
Awesome.
So.
And now you're here.
Now
I'm
here, second time. Yeah, two for two. Yeah. Sunday, which is cool.
Can't wait to see the next one.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And thanks, guys.
It's been a real privilege. Thanks for having us.
Thanks.
Great.
Thanks for listening. And don't forget to subscribe to the No Film School podcast and rate us if you like us. We'll be back for Indie Film Weekly on Thursday. I'm John Fusco. You can follow me at Jim_John_Jim at Twitter. And we'll see you on Thursday.